21. A Journey Ends. As they rounded into the Heads, the cliffs that guarded the entrance to Port Jackson and the city of Sydney, Mr. Socrates rose from his table, pulled on his greatcoat, left the cabin, and marched to the forecastle of the ship. He was surprised at his own eagerness, and that the aching in his bones seemed to be gone, despite the cool June wind. He'd been to Sydney more than 20 years earlier, during the first wave of the gold rush, and had hired a team of ex-military men as prospectors. Within 6 weeks, he'd capped off his personal fortune. He'd had a soft spot for Australia ever since. The spray was hitting the rocks so hard that it looked as though the lighthouse on South Head were in danger of being washed away. But as they entered the inland sea, the water grew calmer. They passed a small village, cottages dotting the wooded hills. Paddle-wheeled steamboats, yachts with their white sails bright in the sun, and other craft plied the waterway. As they approached Sydney proper, there were more houses and roads. The city had grown. He noted the spires of several churches, rows of large houses with broad terraces and steps that led right down to the water. He spotted the signal station, a 4-story sandstone tower, and the observatory beside it. Somewhere behind it would be the old Rum Hospital, which had become Sydney's Parliament House. He had once stood inside that building, warning the politicians to guard their young country well. This was what he needed, to see what the young colonies were doing. He'd been sitting at the old heart of the empire for far too long. "We really are in the new world now," an unfamiliar voice beside him said. He turned and was surprised to see Modo. His voice had sounded deeper. The boy's face was perfectly formed. He really had mastered the transformations. "Yes, son, we are," Mr. Socrates said. There was a lift in his heart, coupled with sadness, as he called Modo his son. His only real son had died moments after being born many years before. But still, Modo was more valuable than any other agent. Even more, there was something about the boy's innocence that had got under his skin. If he was honest with himself, there were times when Mr. Socrates had wanted to shield Modo from the world. A foolish and unrealistic thought. "This is one of the most attractive ports in the world," Mr. Socrates said. "Picturesque, even. Its description stumped Anthony Trollope. Did you read his work before our visit?" "There were very few books in our house that mentioned Australia, father," Modo said. "Ah, I should have remedied that. We left too quickly to gather the proper educational materials. Well, this is a mariner's and an engineer's dream, so many natural bays with calm water, and gently sloped hills." "It's more established than I thought it would be," Modo said. "We civilized this area years ago. The colonies have thrived under the nurturing hand of the Empire. Well, that and the gold rush. There are around 200,000 souls here in Sydney. We sent our ne'er-do-wells, our Scots and Irish, our explorers, and look what has been created by British ingenuity." He waved his hand. As the boy looked at the city, Mr. Socrates glanced at him. At times, Modo seemed to worship him. It was both a compliment and a bad habit. He would have to harden the boy's heart. The world out there was tough, unforgiving, especially for one whose real face would frighten children and repulse adults. If there was one thing he knew about British society, it was that it loved to destroy the ugly. He would have to be more disciplined with the boy, for his own good. Then he took another look at Modo and realized he was no longer a boy. How old would he be now? He'd discovered Modo 14 years ago as a toddler. He would be 15 or 16. A young man. Why hadn't he given Modo a birthday? He could have picked a date out of the air. "You sentimental old fool," he chastised himself. "What does Modo need with a birthday?" He'd been protecting him far too much. Modo had been ready to go on several missions in the past few months, but Mr. Socrates had held him back. He'd almost lost him last time. A thought suddenly occurred to him. Could it be that he was really on this voyage to be Modo's protector? The pain that shot through his heart gave him his answer. "No," he thought, staring down into the water. He must not attach himself to his subordinates. He'd learned that as an officer in Crimea. Those rules applied here, too. Britannia couldn't be protected by bleeding hearts and soft hands. "Enough sightseeing," Mr. Socrates said. "Go prepare. We'll be debarking soon."
"Yes, father," Modo said, and immediately turned on his heel and began walking down the deck. Mr. Socrates watched him go. It had been such a long time since he'd rescued the boy from the gypsy wagon. It already seemed a lifetime ago.